Benjamin Young. I'm of the Alaska Native Studies 401 class, and I will be interviewing Delbert Hayward of Metlakatla. Today is October 11th, 2005, and this will be the first recording on tape that we will do. This is side A, and we will be mostly focusing on the language. All right. So I wanted to ask if you could share with us about your experiences with the language as a younger child, as far as back as you can remember, maybe. Just being raised before your boarding school, before taking off to boarding school.
Okay, I recall my grandparents, and this is as far back as my memory goes. In many cases, I could go back to when I was 4 and 5 years old. And I recall my parents and my grandparents and everybody back then of that age group, those two age groups, that used the Tsimshian language routinely every day, as their number one language. They use it in the house, they use it in wherever the Tsimshians gathered. They use it all the time. So there was a lot of us in our age group that learned it, but I was just beginning to learn it. I was kind of putting the pieces together, had I remained with it before taking away, going to Haines, had I stayed another year, perhaps I would have been able to converse with it. That's as far as it went. And I remember vividly my grandparents, because we spent a lot of time with them in all the different camps that they had.
Was there any particular situations, do you remember, when they'd use it, or anything that maybe stuck out in your mind about maybe someone got in trouble, or you'd really hear it come out? Or
there was a lot of that, because as a kid you get scolded a lot for, they want you to keep quiet, don't run around, all that kind of stuff, and get over here, get over here. There were just little catchphrases like that, At the beginning, that's how you really understood. And that's about where I got pulled away from it, when I got shipped to Haines. And there was a lot of things, like I remember my mother saying, leave it out. It's like saying you're crazy for doing something like that, It's kind of like calling you out. There was a lot of free, I can't just up in the top of my head remember little phrases like that. Those are the two that I remember.
What was the second one? The
phrase? New and Chow.
New and Chow. And what I've researched and what I come up with, Tsimshian's language is called Shemelyuk.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear them refer to the language as that?
All the time I grew up and all the time that I was with my grandparents in those early days like this, like we've been discussing, that never came up. That that was the name of our language. It's always Tsimshian. Tsimshian language. And it wasn't until about the time my dad's potlatch that I was finally introduced to that by a guy by the name of, he's still alive. He's of my father's generation, but he was a young man in my father's generation. But he's still pretty much the same age, but maybe 4 or 5 years my junior to my dad. And he was one of the guys that went over to Canada and got back a lot of our traditional ways through discussing with those people over there, the relatives of different villages. And when they started talking about it after that, they would mention Somali. What is that? this was only like 4 or 5 years ago. So, it seemed like it would have come up a lot sooner than that, but it never did.
What was this man's name of your father's generation?
What was that?
What was this man's name? That
Arnold Booth.
Arnold Booth.
He's, you'll see him in the next tape that you're going to see, I think on Thursday. We'll be showing the tape, and we had the dedication of the totem pole. So you'll see that when they erected the totem pole down there at the breakwater, that'll be on that tape. Actually, when it was transported down from the house to the breakwater, you'll see all those guys carrying it.
Now your father and mother were fluent speakers.
Yes, very.
Would they ever ask for you as children to talk back to them, or?
Well, we always talked to them in English. I didn't know how to use the same kind of language. I couldn't use it. But there was some of my age group, and a very few, a low percentage, I would say something less than 10%, that can speak it fluently. That's not a very good percentage. But, you know, my dad's age group, and of course, they use like we use the English language.
How do you remember your language? Were you guys, was it your generation that was being punished for speaking it? Do you have peers that would speak it in school or
no?
In like grade school?
The punishment was perhaps during my grandparents and then and my parents' time, or maybe even earlier than that. Great-grandparents probably went to school. We heard it, you know, we just heard stories about what happened in their schooling years, grade school, and none of them went to high school. There wasn't any high school back then. There was high school, the only place that was high school available was in SJ. At the time, Edgecombe wasn't even in existence at that time. some of this came on later.
Now, Father Duncan, he spent a lot of time with the Tsimsheans, right?
Mm.
Would your parents ever talk about him, or talk about what was being handed down to them, stories, such as, was he able to speak?
Yeah.
Speak Tsimshian?
Yeah, he learned it. Took him a while, but he learned it. And he talked it fluently.
Is there any stories that your parents or grandparents would talk using Tsimshian language, or any stories that you remember?
No. I know that they did tell stories using the Tsimshian language. I don't remember ever happiness, like I said. I probably would have had I stayed there and never, you know, like a lot of the kids, probably heard stories. But I never, you know, I never thought to ask. I just never, you know, after I got back out of high school and a lot of means, I just never thought to ask these guys. There's a lot of, like I say, a lot of guys, even now, that are still alive in my age group that, you know, they can talk Tsimshian, but they can't have, they have nobody to talk to. There's just too many, we can't feel this, yeah. Because I remember Dad mentioning one time before he died, he said, I asked him, why don't you use the Tsimshian language? And I said, oh, everybody that used to talk Tsimshian is dead now. Used to use it all the time. In fact, there's one guy, he lived right across the street from my dad's house. His name is Mel Booth. He was one of the younger, probably in the following generation after my dad, but he was not that far behind in age. But he used it fluently. He was between me and my dad in age, somewhere in there. He's probably 10, 15 years older than me. But I remember when I was a kid and he was a young, maybe a he was probably a late teenager. I remember them talking, using it.
Is there very high percentage in Metlakatla currently to this day that can speak Tsimshian fluently?
There's more and more of the younger, say your age group, that are beginning to speak it. They're conducting classes. There's a one woman, her name is Sumner. Her last name is Sumner. In fact, I was going to try to contact her. I got her email address, and she's been teaching that now for a long time. And she's made CDs and cassette tapes. And she's been teaching it that way. And I want to try to get a hold of her to see if I can even begin to pick it up at my age. Even though I don't think I'll ever use it. But I just want, you know, it's always been a desire to want to learn how to understand and listen to these people, you know.
What's this woman saying?
Her last name was Sumner, and I can remember her. She was younger than me, probably younger, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years younger. I don't remember the name of that.
I think I met her before.
She used to teach in Ketchikan at one time, then she moved down to Seattle.
Yeah, in Washington, that's where she has a white husband.
Oh yeah?
I sat in on one of her classes, one of her demonstrations, and we had a Sea Alaska language program in Ketchikan. I remember she teaching a class that she was.
When I looked at Lakato, she was just a little girl, but I think she was raised by her grandmother, is why she had learned it from that. Donami.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember she had a variety of different programs on CDs and CD-ROMs and tapes, different lessons.
I think she used the submersion method. You know, just keep rolling, you listen to it all the time, rolling. All the time, and it's like you're actually using it, you know. Submersion method. It speeds up the learning process.
They were calling it TPR, total physical response, where no English, you watch her, she doesn't explain anything in English, you just...
I know it was different. Actually, you know, when you think about it, that's where you learned it. And our grandparents, they couldn't talk English very well. Grandparents had very broken English. Especially my grandfather. My grandmother spoke French. She spoke third for English.
Sumner. Yeah, I remember she lived in Washington,
I got two email addresses for her. Maybe one's in Ketchikan and the other one's in Seattle. But I want to try to get some more tapes or CDs or anything. I'll buy off whatever she has. But I do say, you know, I still want it. Because every once in a while I get a flood of memory back, you know, on words. It just seem to come back, you know, and then fade away then. You just don't need it all that much. I mean, not at all. Is there somebody doing that for Haida as well?
For,
your Haida language?
As in recording tapes?
Yeah, you know.
Or programs? Yeah.
Donovan is doing.
Yeah, we have someone. We have a linguist working with us. Jordan Lashler, somebody. Alaska. Helps us with ours, and we have meetings with like my grandfather and my uncle and all the elders, all the cool speaking elders, you know. Still going on. So they do that about 3 times a week.
Here on the campus?
Oh no, in Heidelberg.
Oh.
In our boys and girls club.
That's great.
Let's see. If you were to learn a language, you said you wouldn't have anyone to really talk with?
No.
Or how about
here?
How about that man that you were
with? Oh, yeah.
The car.
Arnold?
Yeah, Arnold.
Yeah. He would be flabbergasted. we're approached and spent time with Simpson. You know, the thing that I remember about Simpson right now that distinguishes the difference between the way the young people had learned it taught and the way he taught, and all of my, you know, my parents and my great grandparents and my grandparents taught. It's totally different from the way the young people sound when they use the language. You know, the old way is kind of like, almost like singing. Yeah, and voice goes, ah, 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 things like that. If you talk to a young person and learn it, they don't think that it's all missing. That's part. They modulate their words, you know, how they say it. So yeah, there's another word that you see and you know what I mean? Yeah, you use that a lot, like when you're trying to explain something and then you pose a question to that person. You know what I mean? So yeah.
Yeah. Ah, the zungo. Zungo. Is there any more old style language speakers that you know that speaks the way you describe?
I know. That's why when you listen to that tape, there's going to be a young man and Arnold Booth. He's going to give a prayer at that raising that tone pole. And you're going to hear this young David Boxley talking. And he's got a lot of English accent in his the way people talk English today. It's embedded in his Simpson language.
It's a lot of English influence.
Yeah, it's like
compared to Arnold.
Yeah, you'll notice the difference. I kind of exaggerated the way a lot of the old timers, when you hear them talk, sometimes they'll get down and almost whisper, you know. Yeah, and all of a sudden they get louder and louder, and their voice goes up and down, lower and higher, you know, as they're conveying their thoughts. There was one guy at my age, his name was Henry Eaton, he's dead now, that talked like that. He's the only one of my age group that I remember him talking on that style, you know, dialect, the old Simpson. Now this Donna Mae Sumner might have in that. Her style must be in the old style, because she grew up with her grandma and they talk that way.
That's going to be our next question.
Yeah.
Does Donna Mae Sumner. Now you think that greatly helped, that was a big boost for her growing up. She was raised by her grandparents, mm-hmm. so she got to experience that firsthand and mm-hmm. probably,
yeah.
Which English would probably be her second language.
Probably. And you'll notice the people that talk Simpson real well, and then they also talk English real well, that Simpson is going to be an influence on their English. They'll have that dialect of English, or Simpson in their English. and you'll hear them use a lot of mannerism type sounds too. That's normally used when they're talking in Sinsha. Be embedded in their English. And I always tell them Sinsha when they're talking in English. You know, it identifies them as a, to me, you know, identifies them as a affluent speaker of the Sinsha language.
Interesting the way old style goes up and down.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've had comments about that. I don't have that accent in my English speaking as compared to anybody. There might be some slight anything. But there's a lot of things that the younger people that stayed home are not younger. My age group that stayed home never went anywhere. You know, they'll have a lot of mannerism like that. Things like, I remember my wife, first wife being that way, because her parents talked, and the grandparents talked to her in Sinsan a lot, and they were using a lot, among the kids a lot, and they'll use those little mannerisms type sounds or phrases or words. You know, there's a word like gee, you know, we use a lot in English. In Simpson, it has the same, kind of like the same function. It's sad. They say, but they say it like that, sad. You know, when you're talking to somebody, and you almost do say it like, I don't believe you. I mean, I don't think you 100%. That's what you say when you say it. You're kidding. You know, you say things like that. Well, you don't know it's the truth or not. So you must be kidding. And that's when you use sad.
Earlier you talked about going to, or you talked about being brought to Haynes' house, the Haynes mm-hmm. boarding school, and you said you, maybe another year you would have been very familiar with the language. Now your friends that are same age as you that stayed home, do they have a good understanding of the language?
Well, the majority of them do. I've got several cousins, you know, that some of them my age, some of them a little older. So I mentioned to her, there was one cousin in particular, she's about 3 or 4 years older than me. And I asked her, do you know Tom Simpson? No, but I understand it.
Silence speaker.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of us like that. It takes maybe a year or maybe a few months. That type of training, you know, you're speaking of, you know, you're over the hump. That's what I feel about myself, you know. If I was to be around people that talk it all the time, and just like I said, I know what they're talking about. I know the subject matter, but I don't really know in detail what they're talking about. Same things that all I grasp out of is the general topic that they're talking about. Like when I would sit among my parents and grandparents, that's all I used to hear. He'd laugh and say things. I'd laugh along, making pretend that I understood him. You know. I mean, in truth, I didn't.
So you could kind of recognize the main idea.
Right.
What they're, mm-hmm. what they're talking about. Now, were any of your cousins that stayed home, are they all, you say, the majority of them are silent, are they like silent speakers?
Yeah.
As I understand, as in knowing what they're saying, but unable to speak it?
They know, they could be translators. You know, they know what the person said, and they can convey it in English to you what they said. But they can't speak it. Or don't speak it. I don't know what to.
So in a way, interpreter.
Yeah.
Yeah, interpreter.
There's, you know, there always bothered me, you know. I almost think that they're not really telling the truth about it. They can use it, they just don't want to use it. I don't know. That's the way I think. It seemed like if I was as learned as they were about it, I'd be just
all over it.
Yeah, I'd be trying my best to use it. But again, you know, you think about their upbringing, about their language, how their parents had to go through the fact that they can't use it in public or in school and getting punished for it. So there's a residue of shame that's handed down into following generations about the language. So pretty reluctant to try it. Some kids are ashamed, vivid and strong.
You think there's still shame in people using the language, right? Today, modern day?
Because of they've heard stories or, you know, historically that was passed on. Our parents and grandparents, you know, got punished for using their language. And a certain amount of that, you know, is passed on to the kids, you know, gave me the impression that, hey, there's something wrong with our language. And of course, you come with me or not. And so, you generally have a general opinion that other people don't want to hear you say that. I know there's a lot of people my age up here in the Athabascans. They're that way too. They understand the language, but they don't talk it.
They understand it, but don't talk it?
Mm.
Who would they be understanding?
You know, if they're elders.
You know, older.
You know, a lot of times when you go to a podcast, the elders will talk in Athabascan. And whatever they say in Athabascan, they'll repeat it in English. So you as an English understanding person will know what he's talking about. The elder does that. But, I've seen that happen, Dick, too, like in the lower 48, in the Sioux people down in South Dakota. I've got a son-in-law, a Sioux. He's probably a little older than you, maybe he's in his 30s, 40s, maybe, you know, somewhere in that range. He understands it, but he won't talk it. He knows, you know, when somebody talks to him, he knows what they're saying, and then he'll turn around and tell you what that person said.
Wonder if you just wouldn't want to mess up in front of the phone speakers.
That could be a factor too. You know, there's a lot of confidence, I guess. If you're not confident in it, you're not going to use it. You don't want to make that mistake. Some people are that way. You know, they won't pronounce it right, they won't come out the way they want to come out.
At these camps that you attended when you were young, would they use nothing but...
What's that?
Would they use nothing but some chant?
They use it mixed most of the time with us kids. Come here, you want to be, come here. So you knew what that meant. And they said, come on over here, come on, get over here. So you knew that's what that word meant, you know, you want to be. There's, you know, a lot of little phrases like that that they like say, if I stayed there another year, I think that would be the name of the topic. I don't know why I didn't pick it up any sooner than I did. Because I wasn't put through that process of being shamed by my language. Like my parents or my grandparents. There was other things that, you know, because, you know, like the, our heritage or it was taken away, like they did to us as Simpson, and when we, and all these years thinking that it was because of that they took it away, you didn't feel proud of it, you know. You felt ashamed about it. And so a lot of us, that was a big factor in not continuing on or learning all this stuff, or not even using it. You know, I kind of had a feeling a lot of those kids my age that didn't use it. But understood it. Now, I remember them doing it jokingly, you know, when we're among ourselves, you know, say something simple, and they'll give that kind of a signal that that kid, I don't know what I'm saying, you know, that kind of attitude. When in reality, I think they did know what they said. Again, that's, just looking back on it, I think it's just that shame that they felt. Because we didn't have a culture, That's what I felt all through high school. And you see these kids that come from Buddha and Angoon and all, and using their language. Quite often, and out in the open, you know, they say things in their language that you didn't see that Simpson do that very much. The only one that I knew that didn't was an exception was old Jerry Lane. You know Jerry Lane?
Lisa
Lang's. Yeah, Lisa Lang's dad.
Yeah.
And he would talk Simpson. Or he did it in a joking way, you know. And his all his brothers, they were from Simpson. They're a little older than I am. But he's kind of a person that was open about it, expressing himself. You know, he joked around. And just a lively person. He's just because of his personality, I guess. And he used Simpson a lot, even out in public. You know, that's most of Simpsons won't do that.
He's in public?
Yeah, you know, just talk about anybody. When they're, where we talk only if there's other Simpsons around. We talk, we're out in public, where there's white people and or other ethnic groups, you know, go off to the side and talk to them, stuff like that, or talk English.
Would your dad use it with you during your teenage years when he'd bring you down to fish?
No, you know, just before high school, I would say 2 years before high school, a year, maybe 3 years before high school, that I was returned fishing. But I remember going fishing with him as a very little boy. Like I said, there were things I can remember 4 or 5 years old. And I remember on his old boat, he had a smaller boat. And he used to go out halibut fishing and seining. And he'd take me out. This was before my mother died. You know, I talked to a lot of people and it's, how can you remember that far back? So I don't know, which is something that is, that I remember. I remember my mother, and my mom. It seemed like every moment that we had together, maybe it's because I appreciated mother having been there after I lost her. She used to tell us stories. She used to make moccasins and dolls and all, you know, native dolls. All kinds, you know, like they do up here. She was waiting for an order for skins, because she did a lot of that. She ordered deer skin from Dutch Camp. Dad changed the order. I guess he wanted something else. And he canceled that order and ordered something else. Boots or something, I forgot what it was. And she was home when whatever he ordered arrived. She opened up the box and he said, you know, when Dad would come home from work, he was working down the canyon for a place out by the boat. He walks in and Mom was standing behind the door and she hit him with whatever it was. You know, as she walked in the door and Mom started romping around, laughing. And things like that, I remember. Vancouver, huh?
Yeah, right. After that, that's the first big interview.